Hello, everybody. I hope that you're having a great day today. My name is Victoria. I'm a student in the Graduate School of Education, and I also work with the IT team. So glad that you're here. We're going to take a journey online together. So much has been happening during Stanford's fall quarter, and our goal today is to share, celebrate, and reflect on what we've learned in remote education so far throughout the year. Today, I'm really lucky to be sitting with two of my former students and also two current TAs. I'd like to introduce Elena Darling Hammond and Danny Pimentel, and they are TAs for Education 285A, supporting students with special needs. And we also meet every Thursday in LSTD seminar. Welcome, I'm so excited to be talking to you both. I was wondering if you could just briefly introduce yourself, you know, say your name, program advisor, research interest, things like that. And why don't we go ahead and just start with Danny?
Hi there. Thanks for having us. My name is Danny Pimentel. I am a third year graduate student in the Stanford Graduate School of Education. I am in the curriculum and teacher education program, focusing on science education, and also the cross area specialization in learning sciences and technology design. My advisors are Janet Carlson, Brian Brown, and Jonathan Osborne. Currently, my research interests look at teaching and learning about data in secondary science classes. An interesting fact or something that listeners may want to know is that this is my third time TAing this course.
That's awesome. So you have experience and expertise in this space. Elena, what about you?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us. I'm Elena. I am a first-year student in CTE with a focus in teacher instruction, and I'm also an LSTD and LSIE. My research focus is very murky because I'm a first year, but I'm interested in race, literacy, and disability. And this is my fifth year TAing the class, and prior to coming to graduate school, worked as someone who kind of helped students navigate schools when they had special needs. And I myself am dyslexic, so it's really important to me.
Dang, I had no idea that you were both veterans coming into this. This is going to be incredible. I'm so excited. For folks who aren't as familiar with the course that you're TAing, and I know it's a step course, but even, you know, this is the first time I've really gotten a chance to dive in and see what it's all about. Could you tell me a little bit about the course that you TA'd? Like what kind of student might sign up for the course? And generally, you know, what is the course trying to accomplish?
The course is designed for all of the secondary STEP students. So anyone doing their secondary credential through the Stanford Teacher Education Program will take the course. And the goal is to really help the teacher candidates learn more about supporting students who are diverse learners, and also help them understand kind of what the legal frameworks are around 504s and IEPs.
Very cool. And what about like the class size? Because I know one thing our professors are curious about is how do courses differ for like 6 students versus 15 versus more than 20? What was that like?
Our course is around 50 students, I believe. Elena, you can correct me if I'm wrong there, but the way we structure the class is we have 2 primary instructors and 2 TAs in the course, and we have divided the course up into sections. And sometimes we will meet together in whole group if it makes sense for whatever activity we're doing. And other times we will divide up into sections with 1 primary instructor and TA per section with about 25 students in each. And then from there, sometimes we will often go into breakout rooms, which are much smaller groups of students working together.
Awesome. So it sounds like there's the 2 of you and then your 2 instructors. I believe the folks instructing the course are Linda Darling Hammond and Elizabeth Kozlewski. Does that sound right? Yeah. Okay. And so I'm curious to know how the 4 of you work together as a teaching team. I know some folks have taught courses just by themselves and others have, you know, a partner to teach with, or in this case, you have a whole teaching team. Can you tell me what that looked like and maybe what were some of the weekly structures that you used to plan for this course?
We tried to have weekly planning meetings where we would all get together. whenever one of us wasn't able to be there, usually Danny and I were at every meeting as the TAs, but if one of the primary instructors couldn't be there, then their TA would meet with them and kind of go through what we discussed as a team. We tried to make sure that the lessons had the same primary content, but the delivery might be different in each space, depending on the primary instructor. So we would have a lesson plan that was mostly the same and the same live agenda for both sections and the same activities, but then the way it would play out might be a little different.
Can you give an example of that? Like a case where there's the same instructor, but maybe something played out differently for a different audience?
I'm thinking of one example that played out differently in the two courses based on responding to the students that are in each section. So I know for one of the sections, we had done slightly different activities, largely because students in Linda and Elena's sections had some experience working in schools as paraprofessionals. And so they leveraged that as a point of conversation. In our class, we didn't necessarily have students with the same experience. So we didn't necessarily do that part of the activity. We did it, had a different discussion based on similar themes, but referencing different experiences that students had, and also leaning a little more heavily on some of the readings because they didn't necessarily have those experiences to draw upon in the conversation.
And one thing that stands out to me is that you're both TAs, you're both experienced in this course, but at the same time, you know, you're both students as well. Danny, you're a third year, and Elena, this is your first year. And so I feel like there's this sense of like, you're in this teaching role, but also you can empathize maybe because you're a student at the same time. So in what ways, I mean, if at all, maybe this doesn't apply, but if it does, in what ways were you a bridge between like students and the primary instructors in the course?
I think one way was understanding the camera on off issue. I think having been a student and having had days where like, it's not the greatest day. Maybe my toddler woke me up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Maybe something else went wrong, but regardless, I didn't want to be on camera at that time. And being able to help the instructors understand that like, that's an okay thing and people can still contribute and be present, even if they're not being, you know, visible at that moment was helpful.
Yeah. And I also think that as a student who's currently taking classes, and Elena's also taking classes, we're also familiar with sort of in these times, the what feels like an increased amount of work time, an increased amount of deliverables that are required. And so I think the primary instructors, Elizabeth and Linda, are very empathetic and already really understand that. But I think as students who are going through the same things, just in terms of our communication with the students, I think sort of how we can communicate and empathize with them, I think comes across from a space of like being, also being in that, having that same sort of level of multiple deadlines, multiple hours on Zoom, multiple course requirements that we're juggling. And so I think we can relate to that experience. And I think that comes through in our conversations also.
And another piece, Dana, that was exactly right. It made me think of how we've also been really thoughtful as we plan around what we've experienced as students in Zoom and how we want to make sure that like the things that we found really positive and helpful, we've been really wanting to ensure that we include, and we've been helping our instructor, the primary instructors, know about those things. And I think that's been a piece that if we weren't both in classes all the time, we wouldn't have the same insight.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some Zoom things that are really, they might seem small, but can be really high impact. It seems like the camera on off was a really important piece there. Can you think of any other maybe low, it doesn't take a lot of time, but like high leverage Zoom practices that you can think of that have been really helpful for you throughout the quarter?
The live agenda has been worth its weight in gold, in my opinion. It's really helpful because part of our course is talking about universal design in learning and how you can kind of create structure for students. And to have a live agenda where we can do that for the students has been really helpful. And it's been one of the things that I think has helped create a lot of structure in the way that our class rolls out in the actual lesson implementation.
I would also say that I think we use the chat function pretty regularly. as a way for students to engage in conversation in addition to verbal communication. So oftentimes we'll either have students entering ideas into the chat as a lead-in to sort of an oral conversation. Other times students will be commenting in the chat as a way to comment on what's being talked about. So I think that has been a feature that like we encourage, and I think students really see that as a place where you know, they can participate in alternative ways. And use of the poll function, I think we've also used, I wouldn't say we've used it a ton, but we have used it as a way to sort of launch into class with some questions and then showing the poll responses to students as a way to launch into a discussion. And that took a little bit of figuring out because it wasn't something that I think our section was familiar with. And so it took, I would say, probably 10 minutes to figure out how to set up the poll. And obviously we needed to make sure to do it ahead of time because setting up a poll in the heat of the moment didn't sound appealing. So we made sure to do it early.
Yes, I think the in the moment Zoom breakout room creation, anything that you can do in advance, do in advance. Because it takes 5 minutes in advance, but when you're in the class, it's nerve-wracking. And it feels like it takes 15 minutes, even if it still takes five.
5 minutes when people are staring at you from their devices. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I feel the pressure.
To add on to that, because I actually did have a challenge at one point where I thought the breakout rooms were set up ahead of time, and there was an issue where they weren't set up when we got in. And so I think another feature that I've learned to appreciate is sort of allowing students to choose their own breakout rooms. For those that have the most updated version of Zoom, it was a real lifesaver in the moment where I couldn't automatically assign all 25 students to very specific rooms. I could quickly open up breakout rooms with very specific names for the topics that students would be talking about, and they chose to go into the rooms that that they wanted. And other times, because I had still populated the list of where I had wanted students to go, but it was going to take a long time to sort them because Zoom hadn't registered the groups, I showed everybody the groups that they were assigned to, and they could select into their assigned groups. So that those are some of the ways that I think that feature has been really helpful.
We did redundancies where we had the list in the live agenda and we had the breakout room so that if one didn't work, we had the backup available, which was really helpful.
It sounds like your design for this course has a lot of student choice embedded, and those choices have to do with how they could best access and participate in the space, which it sounds really cool. I'm wondering if those choices and those design decisions, in your view, helped build community in your class. And then maybe I'm also wondering more broadly, how else did you all think about building community in this space? I know STEP is its own tight community, and just, you know, not meeting in person this year has been a big shift.
Part of our community creation actually started when we like even began planning, just in how we created our sections. We created our sections by doing it by district so that they would be able to have really deep conversations about what's going on in their schools. And then we really focused on small group work and trying to let people have their voices come out and get comfortable with each other in small breakout rooms, and then built that to the larger community. It was harder this year than in other years to build community, I felt. And I think that having small breakout rooms was our best way to kind of get conversations rolling. At least in our section, that was what I noticed.
I would also add that one of the activities that we did, it was on a week where we were talking about social emotional learning, we had students do an affirmations activity as one way to model something that they could do with their own students. But that, I think that really served a double purpose because it was a model for them of what they could do. But I think it also really helped us build some community. And it's something that I think was a very simple 10-minute activity that had a really big impact that I think instructors could do, even if social emotional learning isn't like a learning goal for your course. I think incorporating some sort of affirmation or community builder at the beginning of a course, both at the beginning of a class and also at the beginning of the course in the sequence of a year, could be really helpful. And I think pay off really well for building that sense of community.
Could you say a little bit more about how that affirmation activity worked? Like if I'm teaching winter quarter, I'm listening to this and thinking, oh, I want to do that. How did you set it up? How did you design it? And how did people participate?
It was actually based on an activity that they've done in adolescent development in previous years in STEP. And what we did was we created a slide. Usually people would, if you were in person, people would put sticky notes on each other's backs with affirmations. And then you would find out what your sticky note said at the end. And we tried to make it digital. So we gave everyone a Google slide and had everyone leave at least 4 comments on different classmates' Google slides. So by the end, everyone in our group, people left comments on almost everyone's slide. So everyone had these huge slides full of what people appreciated about them.
That sounds amazing. When I hear you talk about Google Slides and the sticky notes, Google Slides sounds like a technology that we might be familiar with before remote learning and certainly before this quarter. I'm wondering if your team at all tried to experiment with different new technologies, or did you mostly stick to like platforms and software that you already knew and maybe used them in new ways? And what do you think contributed to those decisions on which technologies to use and why, especially thinking about UDL, which you mentioned earlier?
I think that we've largely stuck to Canvas as sort of our primary hub for distributing and receiving materials. And then from there, I think really relying on the G Suite series of tools. So Google Docs, Google Forms, Google Slides, Google Jamboard, I would say are really our primary use of technology. And in terms of familiarity, I think amongst our teaching team, there is a bit of variation in terms of how comfortable everyone is using those platforms. And so I think that we've all come to learn to work with them, but I think that one of the ideas is that we're all sort of constantly sort of keeping each other fresh by reminding each other of what certain features do and thinking about. I think the fact that there are 4 of us is really helpful because one of us will potentially think to do an activity in Google Slides. And somebody else will say, well, actually Jamboard has this really cool feature that actually makes more sense for this particular activity, or vice versa. And so I think staying within a sort of set of resources that we all are either comfortable with or coming to be comfortable with, but then sort of riffing off of the various sort of affordances of each of those has been really helpful. And I think has kept us from being so overwhelmed with too many possibilities.
And another part of our decision was I remember Danny and I talking about what the students would be used to using. And like, you know, there might've been platforms that I really loved, but they hadn't heard of, and we only have a finite amount of time. And so like, how do we use our time wisely without introducing too many new tools and using tools that we, you know will work well? Cause sometimes the bells and whistles on new technology can be so exciting and so like alluring, and you have to pull yourself back.
It definitely sounds like there's some balancing work to do there. But it sounds like that's something that your team was pretty open about and thoughtful about too. Just to be mindful of our time together, I want to ask you kind of one last big thing here. And that is, the quarter's over and we're now in this like reflective space. And some folks are thinking about winter quarter, about what are the takeaways from fall quarter that we should think about and make sure continue into winter quarter. And then maybe in the same bucket of thoughts, like what are some things we should avoid? So in your perspectives, what are some of the essential elements of a good remote learning course? And then also maybe what are some things that folks should consider avoiding or just being careful about whenever they're designing a remote learning class?
One thing that was really helpful for us, and we didn't really mention this, is we get regular feedback. So every week we ask what went well and what could be done differently. And that I think was really helpful for us in remote learning, because sometimes you try something and it's your first time doing it, and getting that feedback really helps you tweak it. So I think that that would be something that I would definitely continue in the winter quarter.
Can you say a little bit, Elena, about what platform or what technology you use to deliver the forms, and how long were they? What did they look like? That type of thing.
Yeah, we used Google Forms. We would ask no more than 4 questions. What did you like? What could have gone better? What was a big takeaway? What would you like to see next week? We're at a usual realm of the questions. And the nice thing is because we did it in Google Forms, we could get a spreadsheet afterwards of everyone's responses. And that allowed us to look at that and respond to it in our planning sessions.
I think another big takeaway, and for anyone that's been teaching remotely, they might already sort of have come to this realization, and it's that things take more time to do for a variety of reasons. And so I think that part of our conversation amongst our teaching team is, how can we really get to the core of what we're hoping students will learn in the course, and maybe plan fewer activities, but make the ones that we do sort of really focus on synthesizing information and really focus on sort of having students bring multiple ideas together in ways that, you know, in-person sessions, you might do sort of a series of smaller activities. But I think all of those transitions and shifts in a virtual space just seem to function differently, both in terms of the learning, but also in terms of transition time. And so I think one of the constant conversations we've been having is, what are the most essential activities that are going to be aligned with the goals for this particular course, and how can we really focus on those and bring those to the forefront?
Danny, I know folks that I've talked to throughout the quarter who have taught, and even me, you know, I've taught myself, really sometimes rely on reusing things. But it sounds like in a remote environment, maybe some of those activities are refurbishable and maybe some aren't. Do you have any stories or instances where you were maybe going through some activities and thinking about the criteria about like what makes this a really good focal activity versus what makes something else like not as important and therefore maybe you didn't include it?
I can think of an activity that we've done in previous years that we kind of reimagined this year. So we usually have people do a tech exploration where we have them think about a student that they know that has a learning difference and what type of challenges they face in school. And then they use something called the Tech Finder tool on understood.org and look up a tech tool and then present it to their classmates in like a 30 minute, you know, you have time to look it up and then present it. And instead this year we had everyone create a slide outside of class and then do a brief presentation in class. So we shifted it so they were still getting the exposure, but we weren't doing as much in-class exploration. That's an example of one of the activities that we changed this year.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much to you both. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I really, really, really enjoyed and appreciate being able to talk to you at the end of the quarter. I know I'll see you both around in LSTD throughout the rest of the year, but just again, thank you. And for everyone who's listening, thanks so much for journeying online and listening to our conversation. Bye.